So, good afternoon. I mean, to add Bandana's comments, then I would like to add another few things. That after joining IUAC, I came here to learn the superconducting linear accelerator. And at that time, Professor Kuruk and Professor Finlay were present here. And my first lesson of superconducting linear accelerator were from Professor Finlay. So he derived all the equations in my notebook and he said. And 2 years back, my son also came here as a VSRP student. So I hope that my grandson also will be visiting here as a VSRP. Okay, so thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. Thanks for the hospitality to Professor Satyanarayan and Vandana also, because then I can speak about our project, our aim, our dream in front of all of you. Anyway, so I am going to give you a brief idea about the free electron laser, and the plan of the presentation is in the following. First, I will give you the concept of a free electron laser and early light source, and then the major developmental activities for the different subsystems like beam optics, cavity fabrication, laser, photocathode, undulator. And then I will give you the time chart when we are going to finish it, and we are pretty strict about it. And then finally, this is not my field, so only I have taken some information from the research papers and from my collaborators. So I will very briefly discuss about the few research probability with terahertz without knowing much into this. So the conventional FEL, as you know, the major points is that the electron is being injected into an undulator magnet, which is a combination of north and south poles, and the electrons has to be relativistic. So the energy has to be of the order of more than 200 keV. In principle, it will be of the order of few MeV. And when it is approaching the undulator magnet, see, undulator magnet is having an undulator period, which is lambda u. So due to, since the electrons are relativistic, so there will be length contraction, and electron will not see lambda u, it will see lambda u star, which is lambda u by gamma, and gamma e is equal to e by e0. So electron will emit the radiation for this lambda u's prime, lambda u star. This is the emitted wavelength from the electron. And remember, we are measuring the radiation, or we are doing the experiment in the lab frame. So eventually, the wavelength in the lab frame will be again relativistic Doppler effect will have to be added, and the final wavelength will be lambda u star by 2 gamma. So eventually, it will be lambda u, which is the wavelength of this undulator magnet, by 2 gamma square. So basically, if my lambda u is 30 millimeter and the electron energy is 5 MeV, so lambda u star will be 3 millimeter, 30 by 10, and then lambda r, the radiation wavelength produced, will be 3 by 20, 2 gamma, it will be 2 terahertz. So this is the way we are producing the terahertz or IR or X-rays, VUV in this principle. So then we have to include some other parameter also, k square, which is dependent on the undulator magnet. And the total equation will be the wavelength of the radiation will be lambda u by 2 gamma square 1 plus k square, where k is related to the magnetic field of the undulator magnet and the wavelength of the undulator magnet. Now, when the electrons are injected into the undulator magnet, it starts producing the radiation. But initially, all the electrons are randomly distributed. So there is no phase correlation between the photons which are being emitted from the electrons. So somehow, if we are able to bunch this electron, and if the separation between the electron bunches is following this equation of lambda r, if the lambda is equal to lambda r, by adjusting the parameter of this gamma value and the BU value of the k, then we will be able to produce the coherent radiation, which will be added up in phases, and then the intensity of the radiation will go square of the number of electrons. So now you see how we can do that. Let us say I have considered only 4 electrons, 1, 2, 3, 4, and when the third and fourth, they are taking the first bend, they are emitting the photons. These photons will be going little ahead of the electrons, because of the photon is having slightly more velocity, and electrons is traveling in a wiggling path and photon is traveling in a linear path. So this photon eventually will interact with first electron, and the photon emitted from the fourth one will interact with the second electron. What is happening with this interaction? So when the electrons is wiggling, So you can consider there will be two components of the velocity of the electron in the x component and in the z component. And the electric field of the electromagnetic radiation, it happens in the x component. So there will be an interaction between the x component of the electric field and the x component, I mean electric field of the electromagnetic radiation and the x component of the velocity of the electron, either in the same direction or in the opposite direction depending upon the phase of the photon and the electron wiggling track. So due to this interaction, there will be a velocity modulation of the electron, either the electrons will be accelerated or it will be decelerated. So due to this velocity modulation, I mean in addition to that, remember that electrons are not traveling as a single electrons, electrons are traveling like electron beam bunch. So due to this process of the velocity modulation, let us see what will happen. Let us say I have considered a big electron beam bunch where there are number of electrons randomly distributed. I have considered only 8 electrons here, 1, 2, 3 and 5, 6, 7. So first 3, let us say they are getting little bit energy deceleration, and the last 3 they are getting little bit energy acceleration. So in this process, if they are allowed to travel a long way inside the annulator magnet, eventually what will happen, they will form an electron disk kind of thing, isn't it? And this electron disk, if the separation between the electron disk, if it is equal to the wavelength of the radiation, what the electrons they are supposed to produce by having the proper value of the gamma and the BU, then you will get the radiation emitted from the electron disk, which will be added up with the radiation which will be emitted from the subsequent disks. And in this way, that we will be having the complete addition of the, I mean phase addition of this photons, and then we can get coherent radiation from the electron beam bunches going inside the annulator magnet. However, as you know that when in the conventional FEL, it can be oscillator FEL or seeded FEL or SASE FEL, the electron beam bunch is injected as a in the annulator magnet where the electrons are randomly distributed. So due to the interaction between the photons coming from behind, so and the electron wiggling velocity, they are getting slowly micro bunched, and towards the end of the series of the undulator, it is completely micro bunched, and towards the end only we can start getting the coherent radiation. However, this kind of facility needs a very long series of undulator magnet. So if you see the flash facility or the XFL facility, the series of undulator magnet is extended up to tens, few tens and hundreds of meters. So the facility is very big. It is very expensive, taking lot of space and a lot of manpower also. So in our case, we cannot afford to have so many things. So in our case, we have decided that we will start our activity here, so that at the beginning of the undulator magnet, here you can see the difference, at the beginning of the undulator magnet, the electron beams are micro bunched. So from the beginning of the magnet itself, they will start producing the coherent radiation. So this is the fundamental principle of our light source. So we have to ensure that the electron disk formation is there at the source, means from where you are generating the electrons, and the separation has to be equal to the lambda r, which is following this particular equation. Then we can get the coherent radiation. In addition to that, we are also trying to produce a very tiny short electron beam bunch. So all the electron beam bunch also, they will be a source of the coherent radiation. It will be like a completely an electron disk. So how short will be the electron beam bunch? It will be of the order of few hundreds of femtosecond. So this is also another challenge what we are trying to produce. Okay, now this is the layout of our Delhi light source. So the this project is divided into 3 parts. In the first part, we are having a normal conducting copper cavity which will be acting as electron gun to produce the high quality of electron beam to be injected into a compact undulator magnet to produce the terahertz radiation in the range of 2 millimeter to 100 micron. In the second phase, we are having a plan, this is again very ambitious project, to develop a superconducting photocathode RF gun. All over the world, they have not got a very good success on this, to produce the again electron beam and to be injected into another undulator magnet to produce the terahertz. And in the third phase, the electron beam from the normal conducting gun or from the superconducting gun, they will be injected into more accelerating structure to increase the energy from 8 MeV to 40 MeV, and it will be injected into undulator magnet to produce the radiation in the far infrared and the infrared, and one line will be dedicated to produce the X-rays from the with the principle of inverse Compton scattering. So another laser beam will be coming, it will be colliding with the electron beam, there will be energy transfer from electron beam to laser, and finally we will get the X-rays here. So, this is a very poor way, very inexpensive way to produce the X-rays, because we cannot go for the XFEL kind of facility. Okay, at present finally, we are concentrating on the phase 1, the first phase, and already we have developed the clean room. So, where the there will be in the normal conducting RF gun 2860 megahertz cavity to produce the high quality of electron beam, and after lot of beam diagnostics it will be injected into undulator magnet to produce the terahertz radiation, and this terahertz will be brought into 3 different experimental stations, and electron beam also will be brought into 3 different experimental stations to do the experiments. Energy range of the electron beam will be in between few MeV to maximum 8 MeV. And at the back side of this RF cavity, there will be photocathode storage mechanism, I will explain, to prepare the semiconductor photocathode. And here there will be laser hut from where the laser beam will be coming, and it will produce the electron beam. I will explain again. So, this is the status of our clean room, class 10,000 clean room. This is the laser hut. Now, everything is ready, and we are going to start the commissioning of the beam line very soon. Okay, now this is our outline of our principle of our project. This we are having a high power pulse laser system which will be incident on the photocathode. Photocathode can be initially with copper photocathode and semiconductor photocathode, which will produce the electron beam of the order of few EV initially. So, as soon as they will be produced, the RF accelerating field, the phase of the accelerating field will be adjusted in such a way that it will be immediately accelerated. And at the output of this RF cavity, you will get 8 MeV of electron beam. So, this 8 MeV of electron beam will be injected into undulator magnet, and when they will be wiggling inside the undulator magnet, it will produce the terahertz radiation. And the total length of this facility will be 4 to 5 meters. So, this is a very compact facility. So, as you understand that the heart of the device will be the electron gun, and the laser system, then the photocathode deposition system, because initially I have told you that we are going to start with copper photocathode, later on with the cesium telluride photocathode, and the solenoid magnet to focus the beam, undulator magnet, beam diagnostics and the radiation detector systems, and of course, the electronics and sophisticated control system. Electron beam size will be of the order of millimeter, few millimeter, maybe less than a millimeter also, sorry. 8 MeV is coming because for the equation, the lambda r, the wavelength, and lambda u by 2 gamma square. So, gamma is equal to E by E 0. So, for the practical applications of the undulator magnet, you have to satisfy the particular energy and the BU, the magnetic field of the magnet. And the magnetic field of the undulator magnet will be varying by changing the gap of the two jaws of the magnet. So, there is a physical limitations, and inside the minimum gap, you have to have the beam pipe. So, the beam has to flow through that also. So, I will come to the this point, it will be more and more clear. Yeah.
For the people who use the light source, what is the effect of that? Does that mean that they get lower
frequencies? No, this is the 8 MeV is coming from the our two frequency 0.18 to 3 terahertz.
Yes. But when XFL that you are
comparing. No, I am not comparing XFL. XFL is a huge project. Exactly. We are trying to produce a terahertz radiation from a very compact FEL. So, 8 MeV, the energy requirement is coming to satisfy that particular equation and the particular parameter of the undulator magnet.
Is there a signal
terahertz is the final motivation. I'll come back to your question. Okay, so development of the first phase is that physics design, where the wavelength range has to be decided, and it has been decided that this is our wavelength range 0.18 to 3 terahertz depending upon our requirement of the machine. Energy is 8 MeV, and optics calculation, radiation calculation has been done. Choice of accelerating components, the RF cavity will be 2860 megahertz. This has been done and built in collaboration with KEK Japan. Photocathode design has been done by us. I will explain the design also. Fabrication is going to be done in collaboration with Brookhaven,
laser, the parameter have been finalized. The first part also was tested and installed at IUAC. This is again a collaborative effort between us and KEK. Klystron and modulator order has been placed, and we are going to get the order delivery by spring of this year. Solenoid has been ordered, undulator is at the design stage. We are going to start the procurement process very soon. In the electronics and control, the design has been done. This is being done in collaboration with BRC, and components are also being procured.
So, are you having this labor?
Yes, yes.
But how will you prove this?
I will explain. Okay. I will explain. Okay, the scheme of the laser pulses and electron beam bunches is again another very challenging thing. 3 microsecond, actually, you know, this is a normal conducting cavity, you cannot go for the CW operation because of the heating issues, power requirement. So, 3 microsecond for the time width when the cavity will be energized, and within 3 microsecond electron beam bunch will be emitted from the copper cavity. So, in this case, within 3 microseconds, we are planning to have 15 laser pulses which will be coming within 3 microsecond time period, and the electron beam will be produced. And this 15 laser pulses each will be split into 2, 4, 8 and 16 laser pulses. So, in total in 3 microsecond period, we will be having 15 times 16 electron micro bunches. And this laser, this RF will be coming at a frequency of 6.25 hertz. So, the total number of laser micro pulses and electron bunches will be 15 times 16 times 6.25. So, 1500 pulses will be generated in a second. So, this is the scheme. And to do that, I mean, when you go and design and order something, you have to have, initially you have to have the simulation, the beam optics calculation. And here many devices are involved: photocathode, laser, cavity, solenoid, quadrupole magnet, and the, of course, the undulator magnet. And what is the results? I will explain that how we are generating the 16 pulses. So, this has been done, this is the plot of 16 micro bunches at the exit of the undulator, and this is the plot of the 2 micro bunches of electrons at the exit of undulator for 2 different extreme frequency, 0.18 terahertz and 3 terahertz. And this is the plot of the beam size, sigma x and sigma y, for from the photocathode up to the exit of the undulator magnet. And this is for 3 terahertz, this is for 0.18 terahertz. So, now another very important thing we have to understand, that how many undulator period you are going to have in the final design. So, let us see where the photon meets electron. For the sake of discussion, I have only included 4 electrons, and each of them is emitting a photon when they are going in the first bend of the undulator magnet. So, in the after the first bend, when it is going to the second bend, remember the photon is traveling straight away and electron is wiggling, and electron velocity also is slightly less than the photon. So, the second, third and fourth will get the photon which is coming from the back, and eventually they will also produce another photon because it is also being bent. So, second, third and fourth will be having 2 photons each, and then when they will be coming, and when they will be coming in the third bend, only third and fourth will be having the photon, 2 photons which is coming from the back side, and third and fourth again will produce another one. So, they will be having 3 photons each. So, in the fourth bend, only the last one will be having the 3 photons from the back, and it will also produce another one. Okay? So, the 4 photons will be generated from the last one. So, now we can understand that if we want to have the maximum number of photons from the 4 electrons, we have to have 4 bends, right? And in this way, if we are having minimum of 7 bends, then all the 4 of them will generate the 4 photons each. So, from the 8 bends onwards, photon intensity will start falling. So, with this kind of physics conception, we have started developing a simulation program in C++. And here you can see, if we have 16 micro bunches, the radiation is increasing up to the 16 bends, and from 16 bends for another 15 bends, the radiation is becoming constant, as I have explained, and from the 29 bends onwards, so it is being reduced. So, in our case, the total number of periods of the undulator is 30 periods. And this is the simulation results of this terahertz, which is going in the free space. And you remember that when the jaws of the undulator magnet is coming, so we cannot have the free space of a big cylindrical pipe. We have to have a beam pipe whose y direction is only 20 millimeter, And due to this restriction, that this radiation propagating through the beam pipe is being little bit distorted. So another very important issue of this thing is that when the photons, when the terahertz is being generated, it is going in a conical fashion. So this terahertz is going to hit the beam pipe, and the total dimension of our pipe inside the undulator magnet is 40 millimeter, 20 millimeter by 1.5 millimeter. So there will be some kind of interaction between the terahertz and the aluminum pipe or inside the undulator magnet. So there will be some kind of attenuation, and this attenuation has been calculated for 1.5 meter length is 0.17 dB and 0.51 dB, and these are the equations have been used. Sorry, no, it's millimeter, for 40 millimeter by 20 millimeter versus 1.5 meter. So this is the beam pipe dimension. 20 millimeter has been chosen because the two jaws have to come down, and then you have to generate the maximum field from the undulator magnet, and then the jaws can be opened up to reduce the BU factor, because you have to tune the whole machine. Okay, now the RF cavity. So this is a simulation of 2860 megahertz cavity. This is the studio plot. This is the super fish, and this is made by OFHC copper. This is the full picture of the cavity, water cooled, frequency 2860 megahertz. The quality factor is very important, 15200, and the central frequency we are aimed to have 2860 megahertz. However, this will be operated at 30 degrees Celsius. So we hope that we will get this frequency. And this is the plot between the bead pool data and this plot from the superfish. I do not have any time to explain all these things in detail. However, this is the final result. Kleistron modulator has been ordered. This is also very important thing, that oscillator is 2860 megahertz. So this is supplying the frequency to the Kleistron, and simultaneously after dividing it by 22, it is supplying the frequency to the clock. This is important in this sense, because finally we will be having three parameters: terahertz, electron beam and laser. Right. So these three things are having a same clock. So you can do a pump probe experiment by using any of the three things. So this is also important from that angle. So this is the waveguide design outside of the our clean room, and so this is the waveguide design inside of the clean room. So these are all other technical details. So this is the few parameters of the Kleistron. I am just going to skip this slide. Now the laser device. So this will answer your question, how we can tune it. So as I have told you, the laser is coming at a frequency of 5 megahertz, and each laser pulse can be split into 2, 4, 8 and 16 laser pulses. So how it will be done, that I will explain later on, but in each of the cases, that when the laser is coming and hitting the photocathode, it is generating this thing. In each cases, I will be having some provision by which I can vary the separation of the laser pulses. So, and for each and every separation, as I have explained in the past, that if the separation is equal to the particular wavelength, which satisfies the equation for a certain amount of energy of the electron beam and certain amount of magnetic field of the undulator magnet, then it will satisfy, and finally we will get this coherent radiation from the undulator magnet. So this is the way the whole machine can be tuned from 3 to 0.18 terahertz. No, field is fixed, I mean for a particular gap, but we will be having a provisions by which you can change the gap. So the gap can be varied from 20 millimeter to 45 millimeter. So when the gap is 20 millimeter, you can get maximum BU, magnetic field. When the gap is 45 millimeter, you get minimum magnetic field. And so in this equation, you can plug this BU, and you can according to that, you can choose the energy of the electron beam to select a particular wavelength, and that particular wavelength has to be equal to the separation between the laser pulses as well as electron micro bunches. So then you can tune the machine.
So the
intensity is not going to be affected. Of course, that your total amount of average power, because when you will be having a too much gaps, let us say when the separation between the two electron micro bunches is the minimum, the gap will be, let us say, 500 femtosecond, and when the gap will be maximum, it will be 6 picosecond. So when you will be having 6 picosecond gap, you can generate only 2 electron beam bunches. If you remember that the beam optics plot what I have showed you, there are only 2 bunches. So the amount of average power will be reducing when you will be having lesser and lesser micro pulses.
Okay, so
Okay, and this is the power of the fiber laser and the total charge from the two photocathodes. So this is the energy per pulse. So this is the 10 microjoule and 0.1 microjoule, and we have calculated this thing. So when we will be using the copper photocathode to produce the electrons, so we can have a 20 picocoulomb of the total current coming out from the copper photocathode, and for the cesium telluride it will be 200 picocoulomb. So this data have been verified by our beam optics calculation simulation, and we need actually lower than this value. So from the point of view of power of the laser, we are quite well. I mean, there is no problem from the laser power point of view. And the first part of the system was tested and installed, and the remaining part will be integrated at IVC during this summer.
The lifetime of both the
photocathodes will be similar to tellurium? No. Copper photocathode is never ending. It is a bulk copper. And cesium telluride, if we are getting, if we are trying to get 1% or below, it can go up to few years. This is the experience of the people. That depends how good you are developing. So I will also explain how we are planning to develop. Okay, now how do we split a single laser pulse into 2, 4, 8 and 16? This is basically a play of using this a number of halfway plate, polarized beam splitter, quarter wave plate and the mirrors, which some of them are movable, some of them are fixed. So when you inject a shoot a laser pulse which is having a S wave into the halfway plate, it will be split into S by P, and eventually after going all this thing, it will be, you will be having two S and P, and if the two S and P again they are flowing through the whole circuit, so you will get two S here, and this will be coming back from the other movable mirror, and eventually you will get two P. So remember, this mirror and this mirror, they are having movable mechanism by piezo actuator, which can be moved in the accuracy of few micron. So by playing the position of these two mirror, movable mirror 1 and movable mirror 2, either we can vary the separation between the pair of pulses, or we can vary the separation between the individual pair of pulses. So this is the way you can generate a single laser pulse into 2, 4, 8 and 16. Beyond 16, why you cannot go? Because in the power of the laser is going, is dropping down drastically, but in principle you can go. Okay, this is the testing and installations of the prototype fiber oscillator and preamplifier. This is the block diagram. I am not going to the details. Only I would like to mention that the A and B, which is the oscillator and the preamplifier, now have been tested at IVC, and this is now working satisfactorily, and the remaining part will be installed within a few months. And this is the team who were present during the testing of the laser device at IVC. So there are again a few results of the laser devices. This is a 130 megahertz oscillator. It has been oscillating. This is the results and the some other details. And here another important thing is that the central wavelength is 1030 nanometer. Remember, we are trying to produce this UV from the IR range, and this is the optical bandwidth is 2.8 nanometer. We need to increase it to 10 nanometer because we are going to produce 200 femtosecond of laser pulses. So photocathode deposition system, that again I have told you that we are going to have a plan to develop the cesium telluride photocathode deposition system. So first we will start with the copper photocathode, which will be sitting here. The laser beam will be will hit and it will produce electron beam bunches. Finally we will go for the semiconductor photocathode. In later on we can go for some other semiconductor photocathode also, like potassium, cesium, antimony. With our laser system, we can expect around 200 picocoulomb for 16 micro bunches.
I mean, is that also a parameter for the overall later on to get the coherent
deviation? Oh yes, definitely. I will show you the deliverables. There you can see the parameters what we expected. So the base vacuum, the challenge of this chamber, of this whole mechanism, is that base vacuum has to be 5×10⁻¹ millibar, and it is consisting of four different chambers. The first chamber is a cleaning chamber, second is deposition, third is the storage, and fourth one is the insertion chamber. And all the chambers, the photocathode plug will be moving from one chamber to the other without breaking the vacuum, with a base vacuum of 5×10⁻¹ millibar. So that itself is a very challenging task. And how we are going to do that? First, the six photocathode plugs will be installed, and from the top, and they will be cleaned by the laser pulses which is coming from the bottom. because you need to have a very clean surface before the deposition. And finally, it will be inserted into the deposition chamber, and inside the deposition chamber there will be another vacuum manipulator which will be coming from the top, and it will be grabbing one photocathode plug, and there will be a docking arrangements by which it will be docked inside a place which will be having a cooling and heating arrangements both, because we are going to deposit the cesium telluride initially and finally potassium cesium antimony. So, we have to have a different temperature maintained for the different substrate deposition, and we will be having a co-deposition process. So, there are three ports from where we can have six sources coming from the three sides, and either we can have a single deposition or a co-deposition. So, when the deposition is over, the plug will be taken out, and there will be some kind of a four kind of arrangements which will be coming. It will flip the photocathode, there will be another vacuum manipulator from the other side, it will grab it, and it will insert this thing into the storage chamber. So, inside the storage chamber there will be some kind of a 3-pin mechanism coming from the bottom. It will grab it and it will place it on some kind of a storage rack, and when all the 6 photocathode plugs will be deposited, then one of them will be brought back and it will be inserted into the insertion chamber. So, then it will be injected into the RF gun at the back side of the RF gun with some kind of a RF coupling joints, and then we can, and our electron gun is ready for the generation of the electron beam. Molybdenum. So, now the undulator. So, to answer your question, that when we generate the frequency of, let us say, 3 to 0.16 or 0.18 terahertz, so this is the electron energy has been calculated. We do not want to reduce the energy also too low, because there will be some other effect also will be dominated, like space charge effect and other things. So, this is the two extreme frequency to generate two extreme frequency, and for that the required gap will be 20 millimeter and 45 millimeter. So, these are the two extreme gaps when the undulator will be coming and will be going out, and the accuracy of the gap also has to be maintained within tens of microns. So, this is also another challenge. So, and this is the magnetic field and this is the K value. So, this design has been done, is now ready with the help of the Radia code, and the end structure, because another thing is very important, when the electron beam is coming, the electron beam will start bending initially, and when it is going out again it has to go in a linear axis. So, to match the electron beam along this axis of the undulator magnet, we have to have a pole structure which is quarter, 3/4 and 1 to match it, and then you have to have so many other variables also to make sure that the axis of the electron beam is matching with the axis of the undulator magnet at the entrance as well as at the exit. So, this is the magnetic field of 20 millimeter and 45 millimeter, and this is the peak magnetic field 0.62 and 0.11 for the two gaps, and this equation have been used. So, this is the another important thing is that you remember, you know this thing. Suppose when you are having the undulator magnet, the y axis, if the beam is slightly deviated, it will see a different magnetic field. So, if it sees a different magnetic field, your wavelength of the radiation will be different, because lambda r is equal to lambda u by 2 gamma square 1 plus k square. However, in the x axis, if the magnet is like this, so in the x axis you are having much more flexibility, much more freedom to have a more thing. So, this is the calculation has been done, the roll off value in the x axis, and it has been found out that within plus minus 10 millimeter the field roll off is 0.2%, which is acceptable by your beam optics calculation. But in y axis the condition is much more stringent. So, beam line of phase 1. So, now the beam line has been done, and you can see this is the copper cavity and this is the undulator magnet and this is the achromatic bends, and here the terahertz will be coming out, and this is the way the electron beam will be going out. The total facility including the beginning of the photocathode storage chamber, which is not a part of the beam line, is approximately 5.6 meter. So, this is really a compact accelerator to produce terahertz and electron beam. Okay, this is another thing after this bending this undulator magnet. So, this is the achromatic bends. So, there is a gap about a meter between the electron beam axis and the terahertz axis. So, this calculation also has been done for the transverse beam optics. Some parameter about the solenoid magnet to focus the beam, I am not going into the details, and some strip line and button BPM, because when you move the beam through in the in the beam line, you need to see the beam, how good it is going and whether the beam is deviated or not. So, there are many other devices. I am not going into the details of all these things. And there is another very important thing is that laser reflection meter. So, when the laser beam is coming in the inside the beam line, it is incident on the photocathode and the electron beam bunch is emitted. So, there has to be a mirror in the hole at the center where the electron beam bunch will be going out and the laser will be incident on the photocathode. So, for that there has to be arrangements from the top in a remote by which you can change the axis of the mirror either in this axis or in this axis, in both the axis. So, this design also has been done. Okay, now this time chart, in the 2013 onwards we have started designing the accelerator and now we are here. So, we think that we should be able to produce this electron beam by the end of this year and within next year we should be able to produce a terahertz beam. This is little challenging project, but we think that we should be able to do that. Let us see. Okay, now this is the expected deliverables from Delhi light source. The two extreme frequencies 0.18 terahertz. 0.7 milli electron volt and 3 terahertz 12 milli electron volt, and within a time period of 200 femtosecond the peak current is 75 amps and the number of electrons is 10 to the power 7. And as I have told you that within this 6 picosecond initially we will be having the 16 micro bunches. So, if you take 6 picosecond with 16 micro bunches, the peak current will be 40 ampere within 6 picosecond, because many times will be there is no electron. And the energy content is 12 microjoule, and within 3 microsecond, within a full RF period, the total average current is falling down to 1.2 milliampere and 180 microjoule will be there. So, total of 15 number of 16 electron bunches, and in 1 second it is coming down to 22.5 nanoampere because it is a low duty cycle machine, and the energy of the terahertz will be 1.1 microjoule. This has been calculated by the simulation and finally, we have to produce it. So, these two things are very much different, and the electric field for this energy is 100 kilovolt per centimeter. This probably we can play with it by focusing the terahertz beam, and in this case the total number of 15 number of 16 micro bunches arriving at 6.2 times in a second, what I have told you during the scheme of generating the laser pulses and the electron beam bunches. Okay, now, sorry. FWHM. So, now I am entering into a field what where I am not very confident. I only have got the this thing, this is not my field. So, I have got the few information from the research papers and from my collaborators. So, there are nowadays last 10 years or so there are many good publications are coming in good journals, and the terahertz is becoming a somewhat a hot topic, and this is one of the reason that we wanted to attack the terahertz. So, it is in the organic chemistry, semiconductor, metal, ceramic, and then biomedical engineering, protein analysis, in the environmental also, and in the process monitoring, and to find out the dangerous weapons and the explosives, for example, in the airport, and in the monitoring to find out the mines in the field. And it is being used in the terahertz communication, especially for the short level communication, computer to computer. It is having a huge speed, and it is a non-destructive inspection also, for example, the building study cracks and to check the ICs also. And so, in the coming years, it could be a good years, good golden years for the terahertz experiments. And why it is so popular? Because it is having energy of very low energy, 4 milli electron volt. And so, you can do many experiments in the molecular physics, plasma physics, atomic physics, and in the biomolecules and proteins. You can do some experiments in the mobility in disordered system and in the semiconductor physics also in the nanostructure. I will give you a specific few examples about the experiments. So, in the IR basically they are targeting the bonds and bond angles of the biomolecules. In the terahertz they can do many things in the torsion angles of the molecules. So, it is being very popular to do the far infrared region research of DNA and RNA, where the absorption spectra is 2 and 300 centimeter inverse, and which is reflecting the low frequency molecular internal motions. So, this is the application. The usually terahertz means people mean 0.3 terahertz to 10 terahertz. Our thing is slightly lower than that, and it can penetrate the non-conducting material, cloth, paper, wood, etc. And it is opaque to metal, and it is having a strong attenuation in water. And interaction with the mechanism of terahertz is the photon energies of the order of milli electron volt, involves phonon interaction, weak material bond vibration and deformation. It is very unique to find out the composition of the material, especially for the chemical and the physical structure, and it can detect the variation in thickness, density and chemical composition by doing the absorption spectroscopy and by measuring the refractive index. And it can also do the two dimensional and three dimensional internal images, it can reconstruct. And by doing the spectroscopy imaging, it can do the absorption measurements with different wavelength of this terahertz radiation. So it can map a chemical composition, let's say for a drug or for a tablet. So it can measure the carrier mobility in disordered system, for example amorphous semiconductors, organic semiconductors, etc. And it provides the frequency dependent mobility and carrier concentration. And now this is a very famous pump and probe experimental setup, almost all of you know. So here actually there are two rays are coming, one is producing the terahertz, in our case it will be our machine, and the another ray is coming for the pump or probe experiment. If you omit this also, then also you can do the transmission spectroscopy of the terahertz, and there is another detector system by zinc telluride, another thing. So here the optical pump intense terahertz probe experiments can be done with a few to few tens of kilovolt per centimeter terahertz field. So here in this experiment the reference is given in this paper, that silicon germanium nanowires experiment have been done, and it is having a high potential in the high speed electronics and the photonic devices, which is being very popular to do the research. In the linear regime, it reveals the transport dynamics of the free carriers by explaining the temporal population of the photo excited carriers in the band structure, and it is revealing the relationship between the trapping time and the defect states in the ultra fast time scale in the picosecond. Of course, in our case we can go beyond picosecond, we can go to few hundreds of femtosecond. So many experiment can be planned with our experiment. In the nonlinear regime, the study the nonlinear transport properties of photo excited carriers. So in this case, that a graphene structure has been investigated where the optical pump is pumping lot of electrons in the conduction band, and then what is happening in the due to the photo excite after the photo excitation, terahertz pulse has been charged here, and the transmission spectroscopy has been done. It has been observed when the lower power terahertz is incident, the transmission increases with increase of the pump fluence. And for the given pump fluence, when the intensity of the terahertz is increasing, so the terahertz transmission is dropping. So this is the plot which is showing the variation of the peak value of the differential transmission with the terahertz peak probe field at three pump fluence levels. So in this way they are trying to measure the transport properties of the photo excited carriers. In another experiment that they are doing the experiment with the metamaterials, graphene and semiconductors, etc. When they are having the moderate terahertz fields induced, when they are increasing the intensity of the terahertz, which is of the order of few hundreds of kilovolt per centimeter, then they are doing the carrier heating, and the hot electrons they start scattering to intra band structure in another level in the same conduction band, and with further increase of the terahertz, it is going from gamma valley to the L valley, and in the L valley apparently the effective mass of the electrons is quite high, so the mobility of the electron has gone down. So in this case the transmission of the transmission of the terahertz is increasing, so due to the increase of the decrease of the mobility of the electrons. So this is another experiment, the reference can be here. And this is also, I was talking to somebody in the laser lab today morning. So here what they are producing, they are bringing the terahertz here, and there is a nanowire gold antennas, which they are calling gold antennas, which is having a silicon substrate. So when the terahertz is incident on the gold antennas, it is producing the UV rays, and then by then the UV rays is producing the plasmas by doing the, by ionizing the nitrogen gas here, by exciting the nitrogen gas or producing the nitrogen ions. And after detecting those
nitrogen, this UV lights, they are having some information about the plasma physics. So, this is also another experiment, and here they are plotting this different wave fronts, which the numbers is indicating the initial and the final vibrational states of the molecules. Okay, so in nutshell, so the in terahertz is having applications to biological research, oncology, molecular structure and dentistry, oral healthcare, chemical and biogen detection, and time resolved terahertz spectroscopy of protein folding. In the physical science, physics and chemistry, in electro optics, in the coherent quantum control, terahertz Rabi oscillation, time domain spectroscopy, paramagnetic resonance, spin resonance, terahertz dynamics in materials, which is driven from far from equilibrium, photon assisted transport, material physics, device physics, etc. So, that is all. Thank you very much for your kind attention. I think I am in time.
Yeah. Any focused experiments have been planned out of this, so many whatever invested out?
Yeah, as you know that our institute is not having our own research group, I mean especially in the terahertz and other thing. So, our material science group also is thinking, and simultaneously we are trying to also collect a group of people who are having some exposure about the this thing terahertz experiment. So, we are going to conduct a 4-day school. This Dr. Prabhu also is invited to join, and there are about 8-10 people from different institutes, let us say IIT Madras, TIFR, ISAR Bhopal, IIT Indore, they will be coming, and we will be deciding a plan of experiment on the last day, on the 10th of March, and the half day workshop has been organized. So, when we will plan the experiment, and then we will collect all the proposal and we will submit it to DST for funding. So, this is the plan. I mean, we do not have our in situ group who is having experience in the terahertz. However, our material science people can contribute. Yes, please.
Yeah, this beam, terahertz beam.
Yes.
What is the time stability of this beam? How long, once the beam is produced, how long it will remain there?
Well, it is having a depends on your experiment. Suppose if you want to probe a single terahertz, the time structure will be 200 femtosecond. 300.
I need to do it for 3 days experiment.
Oh, okay. So, in principle it can go for 24/7 for a few days. I mean, there is no way that we have to stop it, because the limitations will be coming from the heating.
Frequency
should be stable within plus minus 50 femtosecond. I mean the time jitter. Up to how many hours or how many days? There is no limitation.
There is no limitation. And then what is the power of this intensity?
Power of the terahertz. So, that I have showed you, it is 1 millijoule kind of. Milliwatt. 1 millijoule per second, 1 milliwatt. But again, this is a simulation. First, we have to produce. Yeah.
But the similar machine elsewhere, you think the stability for the few days experiment is there?
Yeah. If there is no problem, everything is going fine, so we can, it is like a Pelotron and Linac kind of thing, so it can go days and weeks together, so that there should not be.
But it is something between tweaking, some tweaking is required.
Each cycle, no, once you produce the beam, it will last for some time.
No.
It continuously operated.
It is continuously operated.
It is not like the synchrotron injection.
It is not synchrotron, you have to top up every 24 hours, it is not like that. It is continuously, electron will be produced. No, this actually our plan is to produce let us say 2 kV to 15 kV as per as this very rough simulation, because this is far off, so we are not geared up to do exact calculation, but this is initial calculation. And industry, I do not have, Pillai sir, do you have any idea what?
It is hard X-rays to X-rays, I mean hard UV to X-rays. See, in industry is 1 angstrom and inverse one is 61 angstrom.
Okay. No, he is talking about the third phase when you will be producing the X-rays by inverse Compton scattering.
You missed that.
So it probably will have a lower overlap in the 1 angstrom range.
Yeah. That comparison I have not done.
But if the, this thing was really going back to the question, the stability will be better here because you have a continuous.
Okay, I have two questions. One is kind of pump probe type of experiments. You also need another set of lasers and amplifier lasers, etc. So are you planning to have that set of lasers also?
This is the first of all, let us say we are having a laser device and all the power you are not going to use to produce the electrons.
Yes, but that laser is what? Is it a UV laser?
No, it is an IR laser, but ultimately you have to produce UV to produce the electrons from the photocathode.
Correct, but what I am saying is for these other experiments, you have to have a synchronized laser.
No, this laser is also synchronized. So, initially I have told that our laser device, our terahertz and our electron beam, all the three are synchronized. So, you can do the pump probe experiment by using any two of them.
So, what is the IR wavelength that you are
saying? For our case, it is 1080. But you can have green, you can have UV also. Finally, we are producing 200 femtosecond.
Of the 1080?
1080. No, 1080 is much more. So, when we will be producing this thing, okay, but if you want to squeeze the 1080 also, this is also possible.
I'll expect to what I and the other type of detectors, so what kind of detectors are you planning? Because the ones which you showed, they are all using zinc telluride and other things, but those are okay for the laser pulse lasers.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I am just thinking a few of them, but the final suggestions will have to come from the actual experimentalist here. We do not have much idea about this terahertz detection and other thing. Definitely, yes.
So which one are the ones which it is really likely to be the best? What see, typically power or frequencies or the energies that you are talking about are the characterizations. You gave some examples of the RNA, DNA kind of things for which the energy match was allowing you to do that. So can you do any terahertz and start doing that, or you really need something?
First of all, let me tell you, I am not competent enough to give you the answer because I do not have much experience in the terahertz field. However, we have got a few feedback from our the user group, and they are saying that similar kind of experiments, not with the similar material, not with the similar samples, but similar kind of experiments can be done, what I have just I was explaining. So, with this kind of terahertz energy and terahertz this thing pulse width. Because we are trying to produce a coherent terahertz, so where the electric field is the most important thing for most of the terahertz experiment. And if we are able to generate electric field of the terahertz which is more than few kilovolt per centimeter, that will be good enough for doing many cutting edge research. This is the feedback what I have got. And I do not know much about the experiment, so I cannot really comment. Yes, please. No, I don't follow your question.
Length of the terahertz?
Pulses.
The pulses. The pulse length.
pulse length, the single pulse will be of the order of few hundreds of femtosecond. And
yeah.
they will be placed in 200 nanosecond separation.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So 116 train of terahertz pulses,
yeah,
it will be accommodated within, let's say, 6 picosecond. And 16 terahertz pulses will be repeated,
yeah,
at a frequency of 200 nanosecond. And the whole thing,
yeah,
15 numbers,
right,
because 16 pulses times 15 numbers. And the whole thing will be repeated at a frequency of 6.25 hertz.
And that means that at the lower charge frequencies, they are relatively broad band pulses.
Yes, yes, that is true. In the relatively low frequency, it is like CW. Yeah, the coherentness we are getting, as I have explained, that the electron beam bunch we are generating. Let us say I am generating 4 electron beam bunches. And the separation of the electron beam bunches is equal to the wavelength what the electrons are supposed to produce. Okay? So, when this electron beam bunch is producing the one wavelength, this will be in phase with the photon what the second electron is producing. So, you will get a coherenceness, and on the top of this, I am making this electron beam bunch as narrow as possible in comparison to the wavelength what they are producing. So, the individual coherent, individual microbunch structure of the electron also will be a source of coherent radiation. Oh, sure, definitely. No, there will be some kind of a delta omega, there will be some kind of a line width. This line width, if you are asking, because people are usually getting with in the range of 0.1%, means delta omega by omega will be 0.1%. This is very good. Of course, there will be some kind of a structure of the electron beam bunch. So, all the electrons they cannot produce in completely in coherence, there will be some kind of a mismatch. But since my wavelength also we are generating in the order of microns and 100 microns and millimeter, so this is negligible.
Yeah. Would it be possible that you can ultimately get, say, already in the pre-bunching something coherent that you use, so to speak, for the photo cathode, you are already using a photo mixing of two lasers separated in frequency by the terahertz frequency, then you would get periodic generation of electrons from the cathode, and so they would already start with
continuous electron beam bunch emission from the photocathode.
Yes, yes, not that continuous, but continuous beam, but which is free, is modulated.
So, it's like 1080 and say 1085 nanometer. Two lasers, if you put on this, and then they will be separated. If you see the calculation, they will be separated by say terahertz, some kind of terahertz. So that he is asking about the bunches of electrons which will come will be modulated.
This will be another innovative way. Yeah, definitely it is a very interesting proposal. So,
so if there are no further questions, we will thank Shubhendu again and we will hope forward to some collaboration with the Terahertz groups in PRC.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.